You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 39 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the 1-0 victory over Sunderland that takes the title race to the final day. Fred is next up to try his luck on the CAF countdown. And we'll be looking ahead to Stoke at home and wondering if there's any chance of a fourth successive title.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 39 of the redcafe.net podcast. Dan and Dov, how are you doing this week?
I'm fine, thanks, Steve. Obviously, a good weekend, United winning. It's just a shame that Mr. Gerrard couldn't... Well, he did his best to throw it, didn't he? Not sure of it. Don't know if it was intentional or not, but it had to be Gerrard, didn't it? There you go. How are you, Dov? You right?
I'm not bad. I just want to know how your leg is, Dan.
The one on the top half of my leg is just, it's fully come off now. It's just, the human body's amazing, really. I don't laugh that it was all gammy and sticky. Now it's healed perfectly. The one on the knee, though, still a little bit dodgy, but I'm sure I'll be fine in a few days.
Did you risk a game? Did you have a painkiller injection?
No, I don't do that for ethical reasons. I played 5-a-side. I was fine apart from God twinge, but it was absolutely fine. Yeah.
You must be your team's Wayne Rooney.
I'm invaluable to the team. You know,
rushing you back.
I said, boys, no, I can't play, and they just wanted me to play. So I had to
well, there you go. I'm fine, boys. I'm fine. But I'm even better now that I know that Dan's nearing 100% health.
Great stuff. Well, guys, we'll start by looking at the early kickoff from the weekend, which was, of course, Chelsea's win over Liverpool. Dan, you alluded to it in the intro there. Come on, Gerrard, what was that all about? The loose back pass, I mean, do you really think he meant it? Or was it just a case of Liverpool weren't really up for it and it's just one of those things that happened, complacency?
I don't know, Steve. I mean, when I was watching it, I was thinking, I can't believe he's just done that. But I've said it before, you know, he's done it a few times in the past. He's done it against France for England. He did it against Arsenal for Liverpool as well. He's got a history of you know, losing concentration and knocking it back to the keeper. I mean, Drogba did well to anticipate it, but Gerrard, he could have done anything else with that ball. He didn't even have to pass it back. He had the time to take a touch and turn on it. But he just went for the safe option, unfortunately. It's obviously turned out not very safe, and Chelsea scored. And up until that point, I thought Liverpool actually looked like they wanted to get a result. Aquilani had a decent chance. They had a fair bit of possession as well, and Chelsea didn't look very threatening. But that's what decides titles sometimes, you know, a daft mistake. And after that, Chelsea looked in command, and obviously Liverpool didn't even have a shot on target until the 92nd minute. Yeah. Which is a poor showing, really. I mean, if you show me any team at home all season that hasn't had more than one shot on target in the whole 90 minutes, I'd be very surprised.
Forgive me for being cynical, boys, right? But Liverpool, obviously, if they go out, look like they're really trying for the game in the first 15-20 minutes. Then Steven Gerrard plays his back pass, in quotation marks. And then I think from what I could gather, I've not seen the whole game, but from what I've read and I listened a bit on the radio, they weren't really at the races, and like you say, there was a first shot on target in the 92nd minute. Now, the cynic in me says that that's a well thought out, a well constructed plan to lose the game, but not make it look like they've lost the game purposely.
I don't know, but you could definitely say that. I mean,
I don't know, I think it's a bit harsh to say they threw the game, to be fair. I don't think there was any of that in it. I mean, I watched the whole game, and yeah, okay, it wasn't a brilliant performance by Liverpool, but I don't think they, other than Gerrard's pass, which is questionable, really. I mean, you could see he threw his hands to the air once he'd done it, once he'd seen that Drogba had scored. However, he's just a brilliant actor, which is quite conceivable. But no, I'm not sure that there's anything in that.
But all right, what about the second goal, though? I mean, Mascherano, right, he's playing right back. I know he's not his position, but he's still at the edge of the area. Hands on hips when the ball's on the other side playing through. He's like 3 yards behind his last man. And, you know, any football, me in that situation, I think, oh, I'm playing somebody onside here. I better step out. And he didn't even do that. He just, like, put his arm in the air, like, knowing that no one was offside. It was unbelievable. I think that they weren't tuned in for that game, I don't think. Obviously, the season was over already, which is, you know, it's fair enough. It must be hard going into a game like that when you know you've got to play.
That's the thing. I'd say it was more a case of them sort of their season being over and just not being able to get the motivation to get up for the game rather than thinking, oh, well, United.
Listen, it's not Steven Gerrard's fault or Liverpool's fault. Exactly. We haven't won the league if we don't win it, you know. There's plenty of games where we should have beaten our opposition and or even get a draw. A draw would have been all right at some of them. So you can't blame Liverpool, though. It's nice to blame somebody else.
Yeah, you could blame if they lost a game. I mean, like if they played that game at the sort of like 3 months ago, then they might not have put in an abject performance and it could all have been different.
Dom, you mentioned last week about Lazio playing Inter, and I read that apparently, because Inter won 2-0, didn't they? And apparently Lazio were applauding every time Inter scored, so at least there wasn't that.
Basically, the Lazio goalkeeper was having one of the best games all season, and every time he made a save, the Lazio fans booed him. And then when Inter scored their first goal, the whole stadium, like literally the whole stadium, cheered. And then they started bringing out banners going, oh, the Scudetto's over for Roma. And then they had one that said, oh no, things like that. Basically just ripping the complete and utter expletive out of the Roma fans. And it was weird to watch. It was horrible to watch, actually. It's like, you don't want to see that. And that's why I think Liverpool maybe done a better job of hiding the fact that they didn't want to win the game, whereas Lazio were just pretty much blatant that, yeah, we're not even going to bother.
So off topic there, did you see the Liverpool after when Benitez is walking around the pitch and he's smiling with all the players and all the fans? I'm like, I'm thinking, if I was a Liverpool fan, I would not want to see Rafa Benitez smiling at me after we've finished, you know, we've finished what, 7th in the league.
It'd be a goodbye smile, though, as if to say, time's done.
I don't know, but come on, imagine if that was United and Fergie was doing that, you'd think, this guy doesn't give a toss.
I want to be staying. He should get a new 5-year contract.
We'll have more of an inquest into what went wrong, sort of, in the title race, when we go to review the season. But Dov, Nathan Hornsby, he's pointed it out in the emails. I'd say the two really narrow defeats to Chelsea, they've probably been the two biggest turning points, haven't they? I mean, if we get 6 points out of those two games, then there's nothing stopping us, is there?
So even that, even if you draw a couple of them as well. I mean, like, you've got to beat your closest rivals, and I mean, if we can't beat Chelsea, then I would maybe say over the season they deserved it as well. I'm going to get crucified for that, I can tell, but I just think...
I know, but it's like the decisions in the games, though. I mean, the one at Stamford Bridge, John Terry, his goal. Obviously, Drogba fouled Wes Brown as well, and it was ridiculous. And obviously, the goal at Old Trafford, the offside one. Major, major decisions in the title race that have gone Chelsea's way.
I'm sure that we've had decisions this season as well. It just so happens they got decisions against us.
The big games, though.
Yeah, you have got to win the big games, as proved. I mean, like, Arsenal are one of those teams that they went through, was it years and years without winning? Well, winning the big games, but not being able to beat the small teams. Now they can beat the small teams, but they can't beat the big teams. And if you don't, it's proved, if you don't beat the big teams, then you don't win titles. So.
Well, then we'll move on to look at the game that did actually happen, us against Sunderland. The 1-0 victory. And Dan, we still had to do the job, didn't we, to take the game to the last day. And nice to see Berbatov and Rooney starting up front, because Ferguson has been, as we all know, he's been tempted to go 4-5-1 when he's gone away from home, but nothing to lose, so he threw them both on. And it wasn't really the greatest day, though, was it, for Berbatov, unfortunately?
No, I mean, I think the whole performance in January was pretty good. We looked pretty solid at the back. I thought Johnny Evans had a really, really good game. I also thought John O'Shea played fairly well on what was his second or third start of this season, well, since November. We had a few good performances. Rooney coming back, he looked pretty sharp, didn't he? He was running with the ball quite a lot, had a lot of space. Giggs and Scholes just turned back the clock, didn't they? Paul Scholes was, again, quality in midfield like last month or so. I'd say he's been our best player over the last month. And, yeah, like you say, Berbatov, he did all right in the link-up play, but, you know, that the chances that he had, he should have really scored at least a goal, you know, the one where he's on the back post and put it wide, which was a bad miss. But I think that the guy, he just looks shot on confidence, doesn't he? And I don't know, he just needs something just to kickstart him. But
Dan, right? You say shot on confidence. He's played the last two or three games he's played. He's probably been some of the best games he has had in a United shirt. So I mean, what does he need to do? I mean, does he need?
He needs to score a goal, though. It's basically as simple as that. You know what strikers are like. If they don't score a goal in the previous five games or whatever, then they think that they're never gonna get one. But I'm not saying that when he does score, he'll get a bag load. But I'm just saying that he might need. I don't know. He might just need a goal. I mean,
he needs his confidence built up like during the whole week before a game. Then he'll decide how he's going to play. I mean, come on, Dan. Those misses were terrible, really.
Well, the first one he had. I mean, I don't know why he didn't take a touch on it. The one in the first half when he came across him, he could have taken a touch on that and put it in the bottom corner or anything with it. But he rushed it, didn't he?
He looks anxious.
That's what it is. He's anxious, isn't he? He knows that if he misses, he's. First thing people are going to say is, oh, 30 million, all this lot, waste of money. So, of course, he's going to be under a bit of pressure, but I don't know. The second one, when Rooney crossed it, he really should have scored that. And the header, maybe, just unfortunate, but I mean, I don't know.
I just don't think it's...
I would have thought, honestly, I'd give him another season and then see how it goes from there. It depends who we try and buy, you know, in the summer, doesn't it? We don't know who we're going to get. I mean, we've got Hernandez, haven't we? And we've... got the youngsters to come through as well, like Makeda and Welbeck maybe. So, and Diouf, of course. So you don't know. I don't think that Diouf will be brilliant for us, and I'm not convinced on Welbeck yet.
Benzema's been another one that's been muted in the newspapers.
But. Yeah, well, I mean, he's a very good player, but you know, why do we want another player that rejected us last season just to come here again? I don't see the point in that. If he didn't want to come to us last season, then. Why should we buy him now? Why should we rescue him from Real Madrid now? You know what I mean? He's had a poor season, so...
Fair point.
Tough.
The big man has spoken.
just quickly before we move on, Dov, Eddie Gillat on the email, so he's just going back to Berbatov, still not convinced by him, and he says, if Milan offered Huntelaar plus cash, then we should take the money and run.
Is that serious? He wants Huntelaar instead of Bertov, right? No way, not a chance.
After all, I think they're both as bad as each other.
Huntelaar was absolutely abject in both games against Milan.
He's been horrible all season as well. He really has. He's not had much opportunities, but even then, when he has had a chance, he's pretty much been the same as Berbatov this season. And I read something actually about Huntelaar, and it was saying, he's got a good record like at Real Madrid and places like that. I mean, the only decent, like, properly good record he's had is Ajax, which is an inferior league compared to obviously Italy, Spain, and England.
Championship in Holland.
Stephen Klang deserves credit for that. Well done. But then it said his international record. His international record for Holland, I think, is one goal in two games, but I think he scored like 10, I can't remember off the top of my head how many goals, but I think 10 of the goals he's scored has been in friendly games against inferior opposition. So I mean, that sort of brings that statistic down a little bit as well. So I mean, I don't think he would fit in either, to be honest. So I think somebody.
I don't know. To be honest with you, I've not watched him as much as what I've seen Berbatov, obviously, or Benzema for that matter. But I just think that he lacks a bit of pace from what I've seen. Just intelligence as well, you know, holding the ball up. That's something that you probably can't aim towards Berbatov. He's got great intelligence of bringing players into play. I don't know if Huntelaar's got the same qualities.
I think we'd need a striker that would maybe sit on the shoulder of the last man. I think Rooney wants to sort of drop deep and come and collect the ball, and I think Berbatov wants to do that as well. And I think we need somebody with a bit more pace to sort of sit on the shoulder of the defenders to sort of keep them alert, and then so we could, like, Rooney could play balls through, Scholes could do that as well. And then I don't know, I just think somebody with a bit of pace.
Maybe Makeda's pretty nippy, isn't he? He's no slouch, is he? Maybe that's what they're looking for Makeda to do in the long run.
I think in the long run, yeah, I don't think you could put that sort of pressure on a guy who's like 18 years old.
I'm not saying now, I'm just, you know, in the future.
I'm just going back to the Sunderland game, guys. Darren Bent, there was a lot made of the potential threat he could pose on the weekend, and to be honest, I can hardly remember him even getting a touch. He just wasn't involved. And whether that was because of the decent job that Vidic and Evans were doing, or just whether Sunderland weren't getting the ball to him, I'm not sure.
No, he was fairly poor, wasn't he? I mean, I remember there was two times when he was going to corner flag trying to keep it in, he just ran out of play. And the second one when he tried back heeling it and he just like kicked his own heel or something. He's a pure goal scorer, isn't he? He's not. I wouldn't call him a footballer as much. I'd call him more of a. I mean, you know, scoring. It sounds harsh, but scoring goals is obviously the hardest thing in football, and he does that very well. But if he was going to go to the World Cup with England, I think you need more than just being able to score a goal. That sounds stupid in reality. You know, I think you need to be able to link play up as well and bring others into play, which I don't think he does exceptionally well. But if you talk about players who sit on the last defender, you know, why not have a little run at Darren Bent?
You just called him not a footballer.
No, yeah, but what I'm saying is, yeah, but Van Nistelrooy wasn't a footballer, was he? He was pure goal scorer, you know, and if you can provide it. I'm not comparing the two, I'm just saying. If you want someone to score goals, like I say, Rooney and Scholes to thread the ball through, I reckon Darren Bent would be a good option, but not.
Bobby, get Bobby Zamora in there, God's sake. Darren Bent, get Bobby Zamora in.
I think Bent's a much better player than Zamora.
Zamora's proven it on the European stage.
Has he really? Oh, right, what?
Nami, once again on the score sheet, and unlucky not to score after that as well with another one of those delicate little chips that he's been quite renowned for doing at the moment.
That Nani's fantastic. This boy is he's matured something rotten since January. A great goal. And I don't know, what more can you say? I mean, I think if he keeps going the way he's going, he's going to be one of the best wingers in the world, if he's not already on the form he's going in just now. And I think, like I mentioned in the last podcast, I think he's one of the guys that we look to now. And it looks like now it seems like he's got his decision making sort of up to scratch with the rest of his ability, and it seems like he's making the right choices. I think it doesn't stop working as well, which I don't. Well, it can be said that maybe Berbatov needs to maybe take a leaf out of Nani's book, for example. But I think Nani's fantastic. He was one of the best players on the park at the weekend.
So it was a great finish as well. It was a great finish. The curve he put on it outside of his foot into the bottom corner. It's probably the only place he could put it, really.
Yeah.
And it was a great, good move, actually, and it was a great finish to it as well. And,
do you not think it works much better on the right-hand side as well than it does on the left?
Yeah,
we've said that a few times, haven't we? And I'm sure Ferguson knows, he'll know that, won't he? But
you know, think of that then. Okay, I'll rephrase that. It works much better on the right. What does that mean for Valencia? Because obviously Valencia's had a good season as well, but then you've had Nani who... Really, I would prefer to see Nani on the right-hand side than Valencia, because I just think it offers a bit more.
No, I'd still stick with Valencia. I think he's had a really good season, his first season from coming from Wigan as well. I think he's had a solid season and not been a lot wrong with him, scored goals as well. And you know what you're going to get with Valencia. In certain games, I'd put Nani on the right, but if you want someone who's direct and pacey and you'll just, you know exactly what you're going to get, then you go with Valencia, don't you?
I would say no. I would go with Nani.
I mean, Nani provides a threat on the left, though, doesn't he, as well? Whereas if you put Valencia on the left, I don't think it'd work.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think with Valencia, he's a bit too predictable. Although he's good at what he does. He's just a bit like you say, you know what you're going to get. You know he's going to knock it past you and run and put it across.
Can't separate you both there. I think they're both fair arguments. But certainly both decent players to have around the squad. But, Dov, what about the return to action of Owen Hargreaves as well? At last, it's been something like 18 months since he played competitive football, and I know it was just a little cameo appearance of about 30 seconds, but
it's a great performance,
it's,
Steve.
No, it's great to see him back, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's good to see him back. Let's hope this is going to be a return that he's going to stay. He's not going to relapse or anything like that. We're going to see him next season, but like I say, he got on the bench against Spurs as well, so it's good to see him back. And like I say, when we did win the European Cup and in 2008, sorry, he was one of our key players. So let's hope he has a good pre-season ahead of him and gets back for next season. I think you can't say anything bad, and everybody's pleased to see him back. And he has been out for so long. I think maybe we spoke about maybe the mental side, that maybe that's what's been holding him back. And I think maybe just getting him on for those last sort of 30 seconds would maybe a lot to do with that.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
It's time for reserves review now on the RedCafe.net podcast. And Dov, you're going to tell us about how Ben Foster went from villain to hero.
It was a big reserves review last time. Lots of things happening. But this time we had the Barclays Reserve Premier League playoff final against Aston Villa. This was played at Old Trafford only today, which is Monday. It was an enthralling encounter, who three times recovered from falling behind before eventually taking the title on a penalty shootout. The result was 3-3 and then we won 3-2 on penalties. The side featured a few players with first team experience. Raphael, he came in for his first reserve appearance of 2010 at right back. Although Villa, they made a much brighter start to the game. Kieran Clark had a couple of chances there, and Delfonseo, he missed a sitter quite early on as well. Delfonseo, though, 10 minutes later, he took a pass from Barry Bannon. Richie Lake tried to get a tackling, or didn't manage to, and he dragged a low shot inside the post, and Foster was wrong-footed on this one. It took United about half an hour to get back into the game. Diouf, he raced onto an Oliver Norwood through ball. His shot was saved by Andy Marshall, but then the pair combined again. Norwood had a low free kick that was powered over by Diouf, so obviously United getting back into it then. Just before half-time though, Diouf seized a poor touch from the defender Clark. He passed the ball to Makeda, who raced into the area, and then Diouf got onto the Italian's return pass, just put it inside of the far post. So, well, we've got 1-1. Villa, their heads didn't drop. They retook the lead 55 minutes. They later had a bit of miscontrol, and then Villa forward Vyman ran towards the goal and pulled the pass back for Delfonseo, who smashed a shot into the roof of the net. So it's 2-1 Villa. Doesn't matter though, United were soon level. Corey Evans, he latched on to Makeda's neat through ball, but he tumbled under Jonathan Ogg's challenge, and then we were given a penalty. Makeda remained ice cool and caressed the spot kick in. So the game was going to and fro. Makeda nearly put us ahead 4 minutes after that penalty. It powered Raphael's cross over the bar. Obertan, who came on, he had to be taken off, and Will Keane was introduced. But it was Matthew Room of Villa who was the next player to come close to putting us ahead. He tried to head clear a ball, but sent it against his own post. And obviously, Will Keane, he was there looking for the rebound, but just a bit too far away from him. Although, on the 82nd minute, a cross came in. Foster tried to claim it, but couldn't. And then Clark raced out the back post to head Villa into the lead for the third time. So you think Villa are going to go on to win this game. But spirit from Willie Solskjaer's side. 2 minutes remaining. Makeda involved again. Chipped across, allowing Diouf to take a touch. Smash hole, 8 yards. So it's 3-3. Down to penalties. I'm just going to tell you what happened. Makeda scored for United. And Bannon scored for Villa. Possebon scored for United. And Albrighton missed. Put it wide. Keane for United then misses, he had it saved, then Vyman for Villa scores, and then Ben Foster scores, and Delfonseo misses, his shot was saved, and Evans, he missed for United as well, but Collins for Villa had his penalty saved, and Ben Foster was the hero.
Why did Ben Foster take a penalty like so soon in the order there?
I've no idea.
He must fancy himself for that.
He must be playing with his iPod again, I think. I don't know. So a trophy for the reserves. And also, there was some academy action as well. The academy side played Bolton Wanderers, and they needed 3 points to sort of clinch the academy Premier League Group C, although they were held to a 1-1 draw. Everton, they won 2-1 over Cruexandra, which means that the Group C title will be decided in United's favour on Tuesday, with a win or a draw against Everton in the last game of the season. If Everton win that game and then their other game in hand, they'll take the title. So basically, you've got one game, the Academy boys. If they win it, they win the league. If not, then it's in Everton's hands. It was a scrappy game, right? Going back to the Bolton game, it was a scrappy game. Bolton, they got their opening goal in 11 minutes. But Michael O'Harlan, he volleyed in at the far post to put them in front. And Bolton were just much more aggressive. But the breakthrough arrived in 90 minutes when Josh Kane cut the ball back. Keane, it blocked an attempted clearance inside the 6-yard box. And then seeing the ball basically deflected into the goal. It was not one of his classiest strengths, shall we say. But at the end of the day, it was maybe a draw was deserved. And it goes down to an away trip to Everton, which will be on Tuesday. So obviously we'll bring everybody news about that and see if the Academy boys can get a trophy for them as well. So it's all happening at United. future looks bright. That's all I'm going to say from what I've read and heard of the reserves this season.
Great stuff, Dov. And we'll just briefly talk about Ben Foster then. Obviously some heroics for the reserves there. Dan, do you still think he's got a future at United? I mean, he's arguably number two, number three at the moment, and there's been a lot of talk in the press about United on the lookout for a long-term replacement for Van der Sar, but Ferguson's always said he will stick by Kuchak and Foster, so potentially there is still a future for him.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, he's a decent British keeper as well, and English keeper, and I think that it's something we should keep hold of him if we can. If you gave him a season, I think throughout the whole season, I think he'd play a lot better and more consistently. Obviously, if he knows that as soon as Van der Sar is going to come back, which happened this season, he was going to lose his place, maybe that affected him a little bit. But if you told him, right, Ben, you're number one next season, no matter who's fit and whatever, then I think he'd take a lot of confidence from that, and it'd be a boost to him. And I think that he's obviously a very good keeper, but maybe it's the mental side of his game that he lacks. You know, when he's going up for crosses and things like that.
I just think
Dan saying there, if he was told at the start of the season he'd be the number one, would that not his mentality? I mean, would he not buckle under the pressure of thinking, God, I've got a lot of responsibility here. I've got to perform week in, week out. So.
No, I don't think that's the case. And you've got to remember as well that when he was playing in the first team, the back four was changing virtually every game as well. He wasn't getting a settled communication pattern with the back four as well, which is something that Van der Sar, obviously his experience, whether that was happening or not, would probably be able to overcome it. You know, he'd take the lead of that situation, whereas Foster, if he's only just come into the first team earlier this season, didn't he, to be able to take command of a player like Vidic or Rio, I think it'd be quite intimidating. But maybe that's something he'll learn from.
I don't know, Dan. I just think he makes too many mistakes.
Yeah, I don't know. Name the mistakes, though. I mean, the one against Sunderland is the biggest mistake. But even then, I mean,
he made a mistake for the reserves.
Oh, come off it, right? You show me players never made a mistake for the reserves.
Well, he just makes too many mistakes. He's not good with his feet either.
He's decent with his feet when he gets the ball. He needs to. I mean, the things that annoyed me, I can't remember what game it was. I was at Old Trafford and someone absolutely fired a back pass at him in the first few minutes. It was like unbelievable. Just roll it back to him. He had to control it on his chest and everything. Like just put it on the floor. He didn't have to do it. But once that got out of the way, then for that game, he was absolutely fine with the ball. So maybe that's something that Ferguson said. He said, "Listen, go on, Rio, just smash it back at him. give him an issue."
I don't know. He had his chance earlier on. He didn't take it. And but Kuchak came in, and then
he wasn't brilliant either.
He was better though.
Kuchak. I don't think he's any better than Ben Foster is.
I
don't think he's as. If you're saying Foster's rubbish with his feet, you take a look at Kuchak.
I don't think Kuchak's much of a keeper either, but I don't think Foster. Is going to be United's number one in the future. I think we're going to bring somebody in.
We might well do. What I'm saying is, if you gave him the opportunity to say, "Listen, Ben, you're number one, European games, Premier League games, FA Cup, you're number one. You'll play when you're fit."
But I think he'll make mistakes. He'll make mistakes, cost us games, cost us goals.
Well, how many? He won us games in the early part of the season as well. We were performing really badly. Who was it? Birmingham. They came and Benitez nearly scored. It was a great save. Things like that, that's kept us in the title race as much as what he has when he threw a goal.
To be fair though, Dan, to be number one at Man United and to be a successful goalkeeper at United, I think the more important thing is not making the mistakes, cut the mistakes out and rather than making the world-class saves.
That's fine, okay. But for the past, like, how many years, 10 years, you name me a keeper that's been unexperienced and he's played well.
Well, obviously that's a factor.
Well, there is none. Schmeichel, when he came in, all right, he played well for the first few years, and then after that, he hardly made a mistake. You know, Van der Sar, you forget, like, he's, what, how old is he now? 30, so
maybe,
38,
maybe that's
39?
The answer then. We need someone who's had Champions League European experience that can just come straight in and perform, who's in their sort of early 30s and do a similar job to what Van der Sar did. But then again, is there any keeper?
Then you never give any youth keepers a chance, so... I'd go for an experienced keeper, obviously, because they're going to guarantee you more results, like you said. But then you've got to go for, you've got to give people a chance sometimes. That's where goalkeepers will struggle, because obviously you can give an 18-year-old a chance up front, can't you? If you're 3-0 up or whatever, but you can't just throw a keeper in willy-nilly.
That's
so.
A fair point.
I mean, Buffon's, is he 31 now? I reckon he'd be decent for a good good 6 years, 7 years.
Yeah, well, it'll be it's potentially available as well. So.
Well, they've not made Champions League, have they, Juventus? So.
They haven't. Nope. No Champions League in this futures. And I would take him in a heartbeat.
And if he knows Benitez is going there, I'd get out of there right away.
Right then, well, we'll move on to player and cabbage of the week then, guys. Hardly been a week, just a few days. But Dan, start with you. Who'd be your player of the last few days?
Well, he didn't do anything wrong when he came on the pitch. 100% pass completion rate. I'm going to go on Andrew. It's such a delight to see him back. I know that's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I mean, I think it's fantastic to see him back. And I think that it'll be like having, I know it's an old cliche, it'll be like having a new signing next season, you know. He's not played at all this season. Like you said before, you know, if he gets a decent pre-season behind him, doesn't have any setbacks, then it'll be fantastic for us. He can play at right back, which is somewhere where we struggled this season as well. And in midfield, you know, that ball winner, that, because Fletcher can't do it every game, can he? So having Owen Gargreaves back will be fantastic for the squad. But other than that, I'd have to go with Rooney. I think Rooney was sensational on Sunday.
Well, you can't give two players these.
No, I'm not. No, I'm going to give it Owen Gargreaves. I'm just saying. Yeah, no, definitely. Owen Gargreaves gets my shout.
Dolph, what about you?
I'm going to give it to the Portuguese, Nani, the goal scorer. Just great goal, like I said before, great goal forward, got the goal, and just looks like a new signing as well, Dan. It looks fantastic in the last couple of months. He's getting player of the week for me.
I'm going to give it to Rooney this week, I think. Dan sort of mentioned all the reasons just then, but I thought he was one of our standout performers. Looked really sharp. Didn't look like he was feeling any of the effects of the injury problems he's had the last couple of weeks, and that thunderous drive that went just wide as well, about an inch wide, that had nestled in the net, that would have been a fitting for the performance. So Rooney for me.
I'd like to give an honourable mention though to Paul Scholes. I thought he was fantastic
as
well.
He was deep, yeah.
Oh, just honourable mentions, love it.
Well, that cabbage of the week then, Dov, start with you.
do we really need to give cabbage of the week? I think there's only one player I should go to, it should be David Tardell. Dan's maybe even going to give it to him as well. The miss is just terrible. That's it. You just deem it up, Everton. I'm not going to go any further.
Surely not further, so Dan.
I don't know. It's hard this week to argue against it. And I don't think there's many other players that are much worse than him. So yeah, I'd probably have to go Berbatov. Yeah, grudgingly.
It's a hat trick for Berbatov this week. Like you say, there wasn't really many other players that didn't perform that well, and just for the glaring misses, really. That's why he's getting it from me.
That's the only hat trick he's had all season, Steve.
Hey.
Oh dear.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
The latest contestant on the CAF countdown is Bred. Thanks for joining us, Bred, and how are you?
I'm all right, how are you?
I'm not too bad, actually. I'm not too bad. Just going to ask you a few questions. Obviously, United season so far, one more game left. Do you reckon it'll be a failure if you don't win the title?
No, to be honest. 4 in a row is ridiculous to start with, but when you've lost Tevez and Ronaldo. So I'm kind of happy. Also, there's been so many really good moments this season anyway.
Yeah, you're right there. I mean, I think there's a lot of games where we could have picked up more points, and obviously, but Burnley away stands out, and the latest
one. Yeah, stands out Blackburn as well.
It's true. It just feels like a bit of a letdown. I know we've won the League Cup and everything, but
it would be nice to win it because we've come really, really close.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And hopefully come this close this late on.
Yeah, I mean, to come so close and then just to let it go away from such a strong position, it seems
a bit. I mean, Owen's goal and in the derby, and then the Carling Cup derby, and there have been some really, really good Old Trafford moments and some great times in the season and stuff. So it's not like it's not been like Arsenal season or anything, where it's just been almost continued disappointment.
Or Liverpool,
which is even
better. Right, okay then. Right, we'll crack on with it. Obviously,
right, okay.
Eight's a score to beat. Do you fancy your chances?
I don't know. I tend to do really bad at these sort of things because I get ones I actually know wrong because of being asked them on the phone.
Well, I'm sure you'll do all right. Anyway, the clock starts now, so good luck.
Okay.
Who will be United's first Mexican to play?
Hernandez.
Which keeper faced United in the 94 Cup Final, League Cup Final?
I think Villa, but I can't think who the keeper would have been.
Who joined United from Philadelphia Nationals in 1950?
No idea.
How many times have United remained unbeaten at home over a whole league campaign?
Twice.
Who is United's current number seven?
What's that?
Who is United's current number seven?
Michael Owen.
Whose last gasp header earned United a point at QPR in March 96?
I can't remember. Steve Bruce, I can't remember that.
Who was the first keeper in English football to retrieve the ball from the back of his net after a Solskjaer goal?
I guess Blackburn, Tim Flowers.
Good, that's a good answer, Tim Flowers. right, you answered seven questions, and you got two correct. Three correct, my fault. You got Hernandez right, the first one. You got number five right, the Owen, number seven, and you got the last one right there. Do you want me to run through the other ones as well? The League Cup final 94, Mark Bosnich was in goal for Villa.
Oh, see, that was
about one. Yeah, that's what... no idea. You guessed it too on how many remain unbeaten at United. Well, United's one was, that was seven.
Right.
So that's quite a surprise, really. Cantona got the last gasp goal at QPR in 96.
Right.
And yeah.
Oh, that was a better guess. Steve Bruce, wasn't
it? Bloody, you know. Well, he played, so it's not a bad guess. Yeah, so you got three right, so it's not too shabby, but some of the questions were a bit difficult, I think, but not to worry. You know.
No worries.
Cheers for that. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
It's time for Dov's Legends profile. Who have you got for us this week, Dov?
Well, Steve, I've got an old boy. I kept it up to date last few weeks, but I'm going to go back to just after the war. This week's legend is Stanley Clare Pearson. He was born on the 11th of January 1919 in Salford. He was spotted playing for the Delphi Lads Club by legendary scout Lewis Rocker, and he was signed as an amateur in December 1935. In May 1937, he turned professional, and just 6 months later, he made the step up to first team football. Stan Pearson, he was a lovely footballer. He had a mixture of a sort of visionary, but he was an unflashy technician as well. And he was one of the most satisfyingly complete inside forwards of his day. He provided the attacking brains and a lot of goals for the side that was assembled by Sir Matt Busby after the Second World War. He only got 8 England caps over his career. He had Wilf Mannion and Rhys Carter. They were his contemporaries available for those slots. If it wasn't for them, who were also good players in their own right, he would probably added a lot more caps. His debut, like I mentioned, he made in 1937. He set up 4 goals in a 7-1 victory at Chesterfield. And at the end of that season, it was an emerging force in the side that secured promotion to the old First Division. The gifted rookie was on the threshold of what promised to be a majestic career. The war, though, intervened, and obviously a whole generation of talent went into football in limbo. Though, through his years of army service, it took him to India, Burma. He made guest appearances for Newcastle, Brighton, Queen's Park Rangers, as well as his own, as United in wartime competitions. When the conflict ended, though, he was 26 years old at the time, and he was just approaching his prime. And then he blossomed. He slotted stylish. He was really stylishly into one of the most great, best forward lines of all time. Jimmy Delaney, Johnny Morris, Jack Rowley, and Charlie Mitton as well. He was a key factor in this buccaneering side. And obviously, the crowds were hungry for entertainment and success that he brought. Over his United career, he scored heavily, 149 times in 345 outings for United. But he was better as a creator of goals for his teammates. He had great awareness of where they would run, could basically pick them out with his first-time passes and distribution. His accuracy when delivering raking crossfield passes was also of note, and he had all the tricks and flicks as well. The United fans at the time just loved him for the passionship that he showed. Maybe a bit of a Demi Tarabertov type, but a little bit better at the scoring stakes. He wasn't the fastest, but his shot wasn't the most powerful either. Most of his goals came from inside the penalty box. But, see, he made up for this because he had sharp intelligence, he had great ball control and stamina, which enabled him to sort of forage ceaselessly for possession. Yet, even though Pearson and his attacking partners could take your breath away when they played, the United side at the time obviously had a number of frustrating championships. They finished their runners-up 4 out of the five seasons immediately after the war, didn't claim obviously the first title until 1952. In 1948, they beat Blackpool to an FA Cup. It was written pretty much one of the best finals that most people, if you have seen it, the people say that they've seen. The Blackpool side included Stanley Matthews in Blackpool, led 2-1 at half time, but United fought back to win 4-2, and Pearson, he supplied the third goal 10 minutes from the end. That year, though, at the age of 29, the Old Trafford stalwart was rewarded for his sparkling form with the international call-up, and he continued to represent his country on an occasional basis over 4 years, with his most memorable contribution for England being two goals which beat Scotland at Hampden Park in 52. Less said about that, the better, I think. However, back at United, his consistency became sort of a byword in Manchester. He only missed a handful of games through injury before sort of age, and the Busby Babes came through in 1953-54. February 1954, he was sold to 2nd Division Bury for £4,500, and stayed there for 3 years. He scored 56 goals in 122 league games before then moving to Chester in the 3rd Division as a player boss in 1957. So he was still great physical shape as a 40-year-old, and he helped his team reach the Welsh Cup final in 1958 before he retired in 1959. He stayed on as manager though. The team sort of struggled in the low reaches of the leagues, and then he resigned in 1961. And after then, he ran a newsagent and post office in Prestbury in Cheshire until the 1980s, and obviously continued to follow United during his time as a postmaster. But like you say, he's a great goal scoring record, but all the clubs he went to, when he was at Chester, he was 16 goals in 57 games, obviously approaching the tail end of his career. And what can I say is that one of the great post-war sides, and obviously the start of Sir Matt Busby's work, and a great player for the team. On a sadder note, he did actually pass away on the 20th of February 1997, aged 78 years old, and at Alderley Edge in England. So, obviously not with us anymore, but a great servant to the club.
Well then, we'll finish off then by just looking ahead to Sunday. First of all, Chelsea, Wigan then. Dan, you're quietly confident that Wigan maybe could go there and pull off what would be a shock. They've done it before. I mean, being 2-0 down to Arsenal with 10 minutes to go, and they managed to turn that round, make it 3-2. But I mentioned to you off air, I mean, if United, with the games kicking off sort of simultaneously, if we can get a really early goal and news filters through at Stamford Bridge that we're ahead, and potentially as it is the live league table, we'd be above them. So that could maybe spur on Wigan to go and cause a shock.
I don't know if you already know this, but I've always been Wigan's biggest fan. And Sunday will be no different. I mean, I think that it's asking a lot for Wigan to go there and get a result, but you know, they only need to get a draw. And if we beat Stoke, which I'd fancy us to do last game of the season, then we'd obviously win the league. It's hard to see Chelsea slipping up now, but I just think that they could get a bit complacent. I mean, I watched the game at the weekend against Liverpool, and they look like they'd already won it, you know, after that game. Hopefully, you know, they will get complacent, and Wigan won't have anything to play for. They can just go there and put on a good performance last game of the season, and hopefully they'll grab something. Like you say, I mean, if we do get another goal, the pressure's all on Chelsea then to get that goal. And I know that if that was at Old Trafford and that happened, then the players would definitely feel some sort of urgency to try and get a goal, which obviously then could lead to Wigan getting a goal. So who knows? I don't know. I'm just hoping for a dodgy penalty or something for Wigan, and then that'd be great.
Dov, obviously we've got Stoke at home. They fell apart against Chelsea the other week, didn't they? 7-0 defeat. So can't really write them off though at this moment, can you? I mean, they're still a decent side, and they should come to Old Trafford and express themselves. I mean, they've got nothing to play for now, so that could potentially be a tricky game as well.
Could be. I don't think it will be. I think it, like the game against Chelsea sort of said a lot about their mentality. So the closing games, I think they're very, very much looking forward to their summer holidays. Most of the squad there, so I think it'll be. I think it'll be a reasonably comfortable win, and I don't think honestly we've got any hope. I think Chelsea will beat Wigan as well, because I think they're in kind of the same boat. as Stoke. They've got not really got much to play for, and I can't see it happening. I'm going to be very, very pessimistic. If it does, fantastic, but can't see it at all.
Well, let's just pray and hope that Wigan can do something and stop Chelsea, because I think if they do manage to get the draw, then I think we'll do the job against Stoke, and we had a lift the fourth successive title. Certainly, yeah.
Can you imagine the scenario, though? You know, both games are 0-0 with 10 minutes to go. That'd be really interesting, wouldn't it?
That's what you can get. That's what you can get, a dodgy penalty.
That would be fantastic. That. We get a dodgy penalty, and they get one given against them. Maybe.
Well, let's certainly hope we can pull it off. But that is just about it for episode 39 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Next week, we'll be looking to review the season, really, and see. Hopefully, we'll have lifted the title, but we'll discuss that next week. Make sure you join the Facebook group if you haven't done that, and you can email us podcast@redcafe.net. Just leaves to say thanks a lot for listening this week, and tune in again next week.